love of the game. This is Love Said Match.
I mean, Andre Agassi had this goal. You don't have to be better than everyone else in the draw when you go out on the court. Like, you have to be better than someone that's across the net.
I think you got to stay active in a sport sense, you know, go out there, do some sports. I think it always makes you feel better, maybe more tired in the very moment, but actually the rest of the day feels better. And then I think giving back as well, you know, making other people happy is going to give you a good feeling too.
Welcome to Tennis Pal Chronicles, the podcast to feed your passion for all things tennis. And I am your host, Philip Kim, also known as Coach PK, the tennis pro for the Langham Huntington Hotel in sunny Southern California, and the executive director for the nonprofit Love Set Match. Joining me today is Valerie Garcia. Hi, Valerie. How are you?
Hey, PK. How you doing?
Super good. So glad we get to talk about tennis.
Yes. Me too. We're like squeezing it in here, but we always make time for the things we love, right?
Of course. We're so busy, and yet tennis is such a priority. So, yeah, love being here with you talking about tennis. Thanks for making time.
Yeah, of course, Mr. Executive Director of the best nonprofit there is in SoCal.
We're trying. We're doing lots of stuff. And speaking of which, if you, the listener, would love to support the podcast and also the mission of nonprofit that we have at Love Set Match, you can donate a tax-deductible donation directly to our Zelle using our email, aces@lovesetmatch.org. Valerie, I'll just give you a short recap of what's happening with the nonprofit right now. We just finished our Spring East LA program, which you were a part of last year. It was so fun. So we had lots of people come out. And this time, what was really cool was we had a group of people that came out that volunteered, as well as the coaches. And it was so fun to have them and their kids come to our program. And of course, the East LA kids as a part of the program as well. So that was a lot of fun. I don't know if you saw that on Instagram.
Of course. And it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, super fun. And speaking of fun, this Sunday, do you know the active SGV thing that's happening? It's an organization that just is specifically trying to get people to be more active in their life. So they do like biking and hiking and riding. And it's cities put together from the different areas of San Gabriel. So Pasadena, Monrovia, Azusa, San Gabriel. Unfortunately, not Monterey Park, but we're joining them to have an event called Active Streets. And we're going to be hosting a little tennis pop-up in the Mission District in San Gabriel on Sunday.
That sounds like so much fun. And I did see a flyer on your Instagram. So those that don't already follow Philip, I think it's Love Set Match.
Yep, Love Set Match on Instagram. And you can go to my Coach PK one, which is Philip Kim PK on Instagram as well.
Beautiful. And you also have a website, right? Lovesetmatch.org. And all of the wonderful, because PK's got his hands in all kinds of things. So you could see, like, it's like a hub where you could find probably all the things he's got going on.
Well, I'm just super happy to be a part of this event called Active Streets. And it's a really cool thing. It really pulls together all the cities from South Pasadena all the way down to San Gabriel. And they're calling it Mission to Mission because it starts in the Mission District of South Pasadena and it goes all the way to the Mission District in San Gabriel, which is really cool. And people can bike, they can walk, they can run, they can skate, they have dancers, and of course play. So we'll have our little tennis pop-up there too. Super fun, and thousands of people come out to this. They close down the streets all the way through. So those of you that are local, watch for traffic and road closures. And just going to be a whole lot of fun with just people exercising, walking, having fun, rollerblading, everything. So fun, right?
Yes.
And yes. They can go to activestreets.org if they want to find out more about that as well. Free event. It actually runs from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., but I'll only be there in the morning because we have our classes on Sunday afternoon. So we'll be hanging out, but lots and lots of fun. So yeah, that's our mission. We're just trying to get more people to be more physically fit and to learn more about themselves, their body, and how to, you know, move forward in their health.
Yay.
Hey, exactly. So that's our thing with Love Set Match. And let's talk about tennis.
Well, let's talk about tennis. So this is supposed to be, I think, a Monte Carlo recap and a Madrid preview. But full disclosure, Philip already knows this. I didn't really watch any of Monte Carlo because I couldn't see the ball on the TV, and I have a 70-inch screen and you can't see the ball. Something's wrong. It's not an enjoyable sport to watch. And so I found myself just losing interest and I just didn't even watch. I watched the final a little bit. So I don't have a lot to say about that. I don't know how you feel. But and we normally are doing these 1,000 only tournaments, but Stuttgart is a 500 tournament. But I think we both probably found that tournament more enjoyable. So even though this is a Monte Carlo recap and a Madrid preview, you may hear us talk a little bit more about the WTA on this episode. But that being said, Monte Carlo recap, champion Stefanos Tsitsipas. This is his third Monte Carlo title, I believe.
Yeah, that was super exciting for him. I really didn't expect him to win. So it's really, I feel like, hey, maybe he's turning a corner right now because he's been in the shadows for quite some time.
Yeah, like a slump, right? Even maybe one would call it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, definitely he hasn't been in the media eye because of Carlos and, you know, Sinner and, you know, all of the amazing players. But it was very cool that he was able to, you know, rise to the top of this tournament. Very cool.
Yeah. He seemed incredibly happy. And I thought it was actually one of the things that I noticed that was funny. I'm not actually sure if this might have been Barcelona, because Tsitsipas beat Casper Ruud in this final. And then the next week they played in Barcelona, same two people in the final. One of the matches I was watching, I remember his dad, Tsitsipas's dad, has the coaching mic on, and he was talking so much that the commentators were like, I wish we could turn the coaching mic off, because they were like getting really annoyed with him talking. But it was an interesting, you know, it's not that common that you see back-to-back finals with the same people. And so that was very interesting to see. Tsitsipas looks so good on clay. Did he not make a French Open final a couple of years ago? I think he lost to Djokovic. I wouldn't quote me on this. I didn't look at this, but it's not a surprise that he does well on clay, but he's definitely not been in form. So it is quite a big achievement to get a 1,000 championship.
And same for Ruud, right? You really feel like Ruud clay is his favorite surface as far as his results. He just does so well there. And I've got to think it's because he's so consistent, right? He just gets the ball back. I wouldn't say he has a tremendous weapon besides his movement and his endurance, but wow. It was very cool that, Tsitsipas beat him pretty cleanly in Monte Carlo 6-1, 6-4. But then to go to Barcelona, again, it was straight sets and Ruud won. So very interesting. Maybe Tsitsipas was tired by then.
Yeah, maybe, right? That's what's so fascinating when they meet up back-to-back like that, to see, like, did they make adjustments? When you're talking about Casper Ruud, I couldn't help but think of David Ferrer. I felt like you're describing the same person. And it actually, funny enough, Ruud to me, huge forehand, huge topspin forehand. Not lefty, though. And then Tsitsipas, one-handed backhand. Roger-esque in the sense that he's an aggressive player, tries to dominate with his forehand and likes to come to net and end a point. And then again, has the one-handed backhand. So you would think that Ruud would have potentially be able to exploit that the way that Nadal did with Federer, because I believe Ruud has the most RPM on his topspin than anyone except Nadal. And that's an old stat, so it may have changed. But I believe like 4 years ago when he was really making himself known, that was like the big, wow, look at his RPM. You know, he's closest to Nadal than anyone. He still wasn't close to Nadal, but he was closer than anyone else.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Stefanos is not anywhere close to Roger, right, as far as his attacking tennis. His backhand is so much weaker and is really a liability for him in a lot of ways. But, wow, he just really surprised me that he did so well. I think the biggest upset for me in Monte Carlo was when he beat Jannik Sinner, because Sinner, of course, was on a roll and, you know, had a tremendous beginning of the year, and very few people have beat Sinner. So that's got to be a huge confidence booster, right, for Tsitsipas.
Yes, for sure. And I imagine that Sinner will just brush it off. He can use the rest, I'm sure. And also he can just tell himself it's clay and he'll get himself worked into it. It's not like it's his favorite surface or anything. So yeah, so it's like win-win, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was really cool to see that Tsitsipas was able to hold his nerve against Sinner, because Sinner came in with all of the confidence. And I'm sure, you know, the feeling playing against Sinner right now is that he's just unbeatable, right?
Yeah, really.
And it was close. I mean, it was three sets, 6-4. 6-3, 6-4. So it was just one break each, and wow, really, probably could have gone either way. But yeah, interesting calls in that match, as well as really throughout all of Monte Carlo. There was a lot of
line questionable line calls.
Saying, and especially Roddick, he's been on a rant lately on his personal YouTube channel talking about why are they not using, you know, electronic line calling on clay, you know?
Yeah, I think the ATP has agreed next year all 1000s and maybe even actually all ATP events will have electronic line calling, including clay. But again, that's not until next year, so...
And a pretty clean win against Zverev as well in Monte Carlo, which again surprised me. I think of them as kind of the same level. And just thinking that Zverev can usually hit him off the court. But yeah, he really held his nerve. And it was two sets, although it was 7-5 and then tiebreaker in the second set, that Tsitsipas again was just stronger. So more attacking tennis, more aggressive.
Yes. Another highlight from Monte Carlo was Nadal made a comeback. He actually played, because the clay court tournament before that he withdrew. He won a round. Oh, wait, you know what? Actually, am I tripping? Well, that was Barcelona and not Monte Carlo, right? He withdrew from Monte Carlo, played Barcelona, and won the best. I'm getting all discombobulated. My bad. Yes, so Nadal comes back for Barcelona, wins a round against Caboli, someone who I've not heard of, and then loses in the second round to De Minaur, which I thought was incredibly convincing, and convincing for De Minaur, who's playing great this year. And to beat Nadal 6-1 is not an easy feat on clay. I definitely made me a little bit worried. And then, of course, in Madrid coming up, Nadal has drawn De Minaur in the second round again, which is a cruel, cruel coincidence. It's like Iga and Noskova this year. Just can't get away from her in draws. But in the interest of time, I want to talk about your girl, Elena, because let's celebrate, you know? That must have felt really good.
And I'm so apologetic that I'm not a tennis journalist and not less emotional about it and just, you know, presenting the facts for our listeners. But for me, when the person that I'm super excited about wins, I just am super happy and I'm very into the tournament. And when they lose early, I lose a little bit of steam. So it was really exciting to watch Rybakina make her way through the draw in Stuttgart and then win that Porsche.
Yeah, and she doesn't have a driver's license, so she's going to have to get one or give that to maybe her sister who travels with her.
I guess they were saying in the ceremony, this is motivation for her to get
exactly
license. Yeah, but what a big win over world number one Iga Swiatek in three sets. Wow, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's not just world number one. It's you know, the person, the queen of clay, which is not a thing I'm even trying to coin. I'm just lazy for words at the moment. She's the one that people are like, she's the dominant clay court player for the last four years, right? She's won three of the last four Roland Garroses.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes you wonder, like, is the clay so different, or, you know, all of those kinds of thoughts, because she is usually so dominant on clay. But like Sinner, I guess she just has to kind of play her way into clay as well, right?
Yeah, and you do wonder with Elena, excuse me, I have the hiccups, with Elena having a 4-2 head-to-head lead over Iga. Iga's never played Rybakina at the French Open, and maybe I mean, it's clear to see that Rybakina's game is not suited for clay, but she's good enough that she can pull a Sharapova and play on it and beat people because her game is just so good and her serve is just amazing. Yeah, so it's so great. She leads the tour in aces this year, 207 aces. The next person with aces down on that list is Sabalenka with 105.
Wow.
That is a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. Oh, 100 aces more. We should change the end of our sign-off to "May all your serve be Rybakina aces."
Yeah, yeah, exactly. May you learn to serve aces like Elena. No. Yeah, so you do wonder, and now doesn't this just make the French Open that much more like exciting?
It really does. Yeah. It's so, I mean, it was very exciting to me just to see Iga and Elena play, because whenever they meet, or you know, same I think with Sabalenka. I mean, they're just the top. And so whenever they play, it is such a challenge, and they know inside their head, this is like my major opponent. Like, if I lose to someone else, okay, it's a struggle. And honestly, Rybakina was really struggling against Paolini in the quarterfinals. And it was actually three sets also. Paolini won that second set and was really fighting. Boy, she was really good. She was just hitting and making Rybakina move. She would hit behind her a lot, and Rybakina was just off, you know, her footwork is off and stuff. So you really see, I don't feel like she's as uncomfortable as
Maria. Yeah.
Boy, she just didn't look good on clay. But I do feel like at least Elena is a little more comfortable on clay. But yeah, I mean, that is definitely the strategy. If you can get her to go behind her and, you know, keep attacking that backhand and then make her run, you know, the complete opposite side of the court, she's not usually there. So really, really a struggle. But she pulled it off, and that must have given her a ton of confidence for the semifinal as well, I think.
Yes, for sure. I can't believe I was checking the scores on when she was playing Paolini, and I was like, what? Oh my gosh, is she going to lose? Like, nobody would have saw that coming. I know that Paolini is more of a clay courter, but just by nature and look geographic location being raised. But yeah, it definitely was surprising. And so it's good to see Paolini still doing really well this year. And also, yeah, Rybakina getting through that match. And then, like you said, she beat Iga in the semi, and then she goes to the final. And how was the final? Did you watch the final?
I did, but like you said in our text, you know, it was kind of a non-event, right? It, I mean, it really wasn't super hard for Elena. But if I could just talk about a couple of points with Iga, that was really exciting. I honestly thought that Elena was going to win. I think I had the bias that Iga was better on clay, right? So
yeah,
the match starts. Boy, Iga Świątek is such a fast starter. She is so positive and so like aggressive right from the get-go. And so, you know, she was up quickly and broke immediately. And then Elena broke back, which was amazing. But when it was 2-all, Elena again was 15-40 down on her serve. And I thought, oh gosh, she's going to get broken again by Iga. And Elena actually fought from 15-40 down. She fought back to deuce, and then she went on to hold, which was, you know, what a battle, what a fight. So it wasn't close at all. It was, they were fighting, they were struggling. And then even at the end of the sets, Iga held on and had five set point, and Iga went on to have five set points. Elena went on to have five set points, but Iga just kept fighting. And it took that fifth set point for her to finally win with a blistering backhand across court. And it was a match. I mean, if you could just go back and watch the first set, I think you'll really enjoy it.
He must be talking to you, listeners, because he should know by now I'll never watch any match that I know. I know what happens.
I just tell you, even just watch the first set, because it was really good tennis. Of course, we loved when Roger would just dominate and just, you know, blow people off the court 6-1. It was just so fun to see him in the flow. But a lot of times we enjoy tennis where it's really exciting. You don't know who's going to win, and they're fighting for every point. And that's what that first set was. It was
completely couldn't agree with you more, Philip. You took the words out of my mouth. You don't know what's going to happen. And so that's why I won't watch the first set, because I do know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And again, it was a battle in the second set, but this time Świątek, you know, came out ahead. So it really was very close and really exciting to watch. And, you know, of course, unfortunately, Świątek got a lot of press and, you know, talking about, oh, you know, was it a lot of pressure? And, you know, why did you lose it? Such a hard thing for these pros to have to do that losing interview, don't you think?
Yeah, especially when they dominate, right? When they've set the bar so high, then all of a sudden, like, I think if Sabalenka, who was pretty accomplished, had lost this final, she may have different questions. But like, because Iga is expected to win every time she plays on the clay, you know, and maybe if she lost to like Jabeur, it might not be, because she's the different type of player, but like, because Rybakina is not known. She's great, obviously, on clay. And now she has a title to show for it. And hopefully she'll make a name for herself on the clay. But historically, nobody goes red clay, Elena Rybakina. Right? They would, everybody would happily accept if she lost in quarterfinals for the entire season, and they wouldn't even bat an eye about her abilities. They wouldn't say she's in a slump. They wouldn't say any of that. But if Iga doesn't win trophies every time she plays on clay, there's questions, which I guess is why they ask her about there being so much pressure on her. Because she obviously knows what everybody knows, is that she's dominating force on clay.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that she felt that Elena was winning her service easily, and Iga actually credited her serve and her service games as the reason that she lost, and said that, I quote, "Yeah, I doubted my serve a little bit in the third set, and I try not to like have situations like that, but for sure it wasn't easy to see her winning her service games pretty easily and me struggling basically on every game." So that's interesting that you get that insight into her head, that she saw Elena as just taking it pretty easily on her serve when really it wasn't that easy. for her, she was struggling a lot more, you know.
Yeah, I guess what it says is that it was so much harder for
Iga to return than she's used to. Yeah. But what a great way to start our clay season. Your girl Elena is having a great year. She's not been feeling well, and there's been some withdrawals and there's some question marks. But even with all of that, she's won 7 of her last 10 matches. I'm sorry, which were 3 setters. I said 7 out of last 10. she did win 7 of the last 10 matches. She won probably more than that. But the 7 of the last 10 have been 3 setters that she's won at tough battles. So she is like, she is a grinder. Who would have thought? And she leads the tour with titles and match wins. She's just killing it. Go ahead.
Part of that winning strategy is she's moving forward a lot more. She's being a little bit more aggressive. You can see her like hit. Usually what she would do is she would hit her forehand. What's interesting about Rybakina, and I've been trying to put this in my game, is she almost always does high percentage tennis. Like, she's not like Roger Federer at all, where, you know how Roger, he can at any point, he'll just go like anywhere on the court, right?
Yeah.
He'll just put it there. Elena is very predictable. Like, you can almost always guess she's going to go cross court on her forehand and her backhand. So next time you watch her, see if you agree. But, you know, every so often she'll go down the line, but it's not her go-to, and it's not like 50-50 by any means. She really always goes cross court. Even when there's like a total open court, you know, and it looks like an easy winner to go down the line, she'll still go cross court. And she hits it right to the person, and you're just like, oh no. But because she hits it so hard and so strong, she usually wins that point. They still struggle, even though they're there waiting for it.
Yeah, I mean, she's just next level whacking it. The only person probably hitting it as hard as her is Sabalenka. Yeah. Oh man. Well, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for her. I'm happy for me. I'm not happy for me that I didn't get to see the match, but I am happy that they got to play. And the good thing about that for me is generally I love them both. And so it's like a happy either way. But it definitely makes it more interesting. So that then I'm happy for me that it's just more interesting now moving forward. But that Raducanu match against Iga was pretty good. Raducanu took it to her. She did lose in straight sets, but she really battled it out. It was nice to see her play that well. And I think the tournament before she played really well is also, and I just didn't realize she actually seems to have a really suitable game for clay.
Yeah, I think she can hit people off the court on clay, which is, you know, surprising for people who are just putting the ball back. And was it the Billie Jean Cup that she beat the French player? And really, that match was, you're not going to watch it, but it was so good.
Actually, I believe I saw her play. Did she play Caroline Garcia?
Yes.
I saw that. And she played Diane Perry, I believe. I didn't see that one, but I heard it. I think it was a battle. She was like down. Was she down a break? Or a set and a break?
Let me double check that. But I really feel like she just did so well, and she was hitting unbelievable. It was very cool. But yeah, she was. She did lose the first set, and then she came back and won 6-1, 7-6.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And you have to, well, I love her tennis style because she's very aggressive, and she's a bit of a shot maker, I guess, for the WTA. And I like that because there's not a lot of people who play like that. And she's probably just streaky. But anywho, I'm a fan of hers, and I'm glad to see that she's playing really well. And I hope she continues this. Like, I hope this can be some momentum. The BJK and then playing so well against Iga must be a confidence booster. So bring it on. We had a... Yeah, we got to see her at Indian Wells, too. That was nice.
Yeah, I like how she carries herself, and she seems very gracious as well.
Yeah, she's a sweet girl and well-spoken. And also just because so much pressure she gets with the British press, I feel like it just makes you want to root for her. but on a side note, on a tangent, the other headline that came out, I think it was just a couple days ago, Muguruza, who I already thought was retired, but I guess she was just on a break, has announced her retirement. So kind of anticlimactic when you take a over 1 year break and then announce you're retiring. But good kudos to her. She had a fantastic career.
Yeah, it's hard to see people retire without being able to actually see them retire, you know?
Yeah, it's just like a Twitter announcement or something.
Yeah, like a virtual retirement. Which is sad for the fans, because I think a lot of people really loved her and she was a favorite for a while.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you know what? Speaking of seeing someone retire and actually seeing them retire, it looks like Nadal signed up for Laver Cup Berlin, and that's likely to be, maybe this is speculation. I'm sorry. This is speculation. I have not heard it out of the horse's mouth. However, I am pretty sure that because Nadal has said he's leaving his entire life and body and soul on the line at the French Open this year, and that he likely, you know, he would be done this year.
Yeah, he said that.
Yeah, he definitely said this is his last year.
Or last season.
Yeah, would
and he said be his last, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we all know it. I'm pretty sure it's going to be his last. The fact that he even alluded to it being his last means he's probably prepared for it. And I do think that I do really think that he'll play up until the French. If he doesn't die at the French and he goes out early, maybe he'll try to play Wimbledon because he does love Wimbledon, if health permitting. But I think that every time he plays, it's really, really damaging to his body. So my guess is that he won't play much. But he did confirm for Laver Cup Berlin, which is the after the U.S. Open. So very, very likely to be a Federer-esque send-off. Which makes me really want to go to Laver Cup in Berlin this year. So that I can say I was at both of their last Laver... Yeah.
At both GOATs' retirement. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So now
you've got to think that, I mean, of course, it's cool that he's going to play there, but you've got to think he's going to do the retirement thing at Roland Garros. And then Laver is just going to be like an exhibition. So he doesn't have to be, quote unquote, right, playing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you would think that. But then what if he goes out in the first round at the French or something? You know, maybe he won't be in the mood to do it there. Maybe it'll be too emotional. Who knows? We should put some bets on it for fun. I'm sure there's a bookie out there somewhere that's taking real bets on on what's going on. It's a draw a name out of a hat. But so we have about 10 minutes. Let's try and get some Madrid. We have Djokovic withdrew with... Yeah, non-injury related. There was a post to him with a puppy on his Instagram. So many, many in the comments section. All the expert people, researchers on Instagram have said likely he just wanted to be at home with his puppy and his family. And why not? Maybe. He's not playing that great, so maybe he would rather play with the puppy. And I think Alcaraz has... There's speculation he might withdraw. He said he's... nursing an injury and he'll be happy if he could get 3 or 4 matches in. So that should be interesting, but I don't think there's any major withdrawals or headlines going on in the WTA draw that I could think of. Is there anything you know of that I'm missing? Oh, the Laureus Award that Federer used to always win. Philip, just shoot me in the head now. Oh man. Why you gotta break my happiness? Everything was going so well. No. Well, congratulations, Djokovic. I actually saw his speech and it was very, very lovely. So kudos to him. Yeah, you know, why not? It's much easier. Life is good. Life is good. And I still don't think, has there been an announcement that he has a coach? I haven't heard anything. Yeah, so I wonder if he's just going to go it alone or if we'll have a fun headline coming up. Yeah, and so what do we have? I peeked through the draw, both of the draws, and I didn't see any hair-raising, spine-tingling potentials where I was like, oh my gosh, can you... I mean, there was some that were interesting, like Sloane Stephens, one of her matches, because she actually just won a tournament, which is so exciting. Yeah, congratulations to Sloane. She beat Magda Linette. And so then I see them in a very, both of them, I'm like looking at their draws now thinking because they're in form, but none of it was so, I guess, eye-catching that I decided to put it in the notes or talk about it. but I do think we have potential, if seeding holds, potential pretty good quarterfinals. If we were to, the seeds win as they're supposed to, Goff and Javert would be quite a fun clay court match to watch. One of the exciting quarters, if seedings hold, would be Goff versus Javert, which is quite exciting clay court perspective because they're both quite good on clay and they have fun. I think they have a fun matchup because they're both really athletic and have variety. And they're both, or I should say neither of them, are playing very well lately. So it might be a good test to see who can come up and it might build some confidence maybe for them if they even both get there. Yeah, for sure. And I think like Sakkari, she won Indian Wells, right? If I remember correctly, she's been playing really well on like the slower surfaces. So I haven't actually seen her play on clay yet this season, but I feel like, you know, that might be a fun matchup with Świątek not feeling uber confident, coming in undefeated. I'm meaning not coming in undefeated. Maybe that could be an interesting thing to watch. Rybakina would, Zhang Shenwen would be her projected quarter, which would be fun. I actually never have seen Zhang Shenwen play on clay. Is that strange? Why have I not seen that? Is she good? What's her record? Have you seen her play? Okay. Yeah, well, hopefully that makes a good match. And if they both get there, we're on clay. There's no way that these seeds are holding up and that these matchups are happening, at least not 100%. I do believe in Świątek, Sabalenka, and Rybakina, and then probably Jabeur or Goff, one of them at least will make it, but we shall see. I'm definitely excited to see. What would be great is a semifinal between Sabalenka and Rybakina and then have the winner play Świątek in the final. Sign me up for that weekend, please. The men's side, the projected quarters, Sinner and Ruud, which would be exciting because we saw Sinner and Tsitsipas, and Tsitsipas actually got the better of him. So it would be cool to see Sinner and Ruud. In Nadal's quarter, even though Nadal drew Dimonor again in the second round, and I'm not thinking that he's going to go that far, but you know, I've been wrong 100,000 times and I'll be wrong 100,000 more times. Nadal's quarter has Medvedev and Tsitsipas, so even if Nadal does make a run, I guess he has to run into the hottest back-to-back finalist / champion.
As a competitive person, I have to think that like lots of the players are thinking, this is my chance to beat Nadal, to actually have a win against him. Like a lot of these people are probably salivating for that.
Yeah, for sure. I would think so too. Until it gets to Roland Garros, and then I think it's a different thing. I think right. Mentally, the three setter, and then just maybe if he is playing like a Sinner, a Tsitsipas, a Zverev, a Alcaraz, those types, yeah, they would probably believe in themselves. But I think if he's playing other people, they're still going to have that, but it's Nadal at Roland Garros type of feeling.
Yeah.
And hopefully he makes that really, really interesting. But strange to me to see Hurkacz as the eighth seed here. I'm not used to seeing his name as as the top eight seeds, even though he has actually been in the top eight and finished in the top eight more than once, I believe. But anywho, Hurkacz and Zverev potentially. Hurkacz played well on the clay earlier this year. Zverev's been playing horrible. Have you seen this poor guy? Oh man,
struggling for sure.
What's so funny is I just said Zverev. I thought it was Rublev. Did I say Zverev or Rublev?
You did say Zverev.
Okay, well, I was thinking Rublev for some reason. Zverev, I guess, hasn't been playing that horrible, although he didn't play great against Tsitsipas. I meant Rublev has been playing horrible.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, and then, you know, Alcaraz is hurt. So I actually would not believe that these projected quarterfinals, I will be surprised if 50% of them make it on both sides. But it will be interesting. I'm definitely sign me up for the watching the tournament. I've already watched some, and it's so much better. The viewing is not as bad as Monte Carlo. I don't know why it is that Monte Carlo is so hard to see the ball. It's like the same color clay and the same color ball, right?
I would think so.
So what's the deal? Why is one visible on the TV? I wonder if they put like a special filter or something on the camera. They should do something because it was unbearable. And I actually was looking at reading some Instagram comments this week, and people were talking so much smack about seeing the ball on certain colors of clay.
I just rewatched Federer on blue clay.
Oh, yeah.
And it really was easier to watch. Not only because it was Federer, but because the ball really stood out on that blue. So it was kind of nice.
Yeah, for sure. I saw, I was rewatching some old Kazakhina YouTube vlog, with the vlog, I think,
yep.
videos. And she was interviewing Vika Azarenka, and Azarenka told the funny story of saying when they played on the blue clay, she played after Federer and she saw him come off the court after a match, and he didn't have any dirt, any blue dirt on his socks. And she was like, how the heck did he just play a match? I've never seen anyone play an entire match on clay and have no clay on their socks. So just one more thing that, hey, you
to
know
love
what?
About Roger.
Yes, exactly. And maybe Djokovic never won blue clay Barcelona. Maybe that's the one thing that Federer can hang on to. When they're having the GOAT debate, that'll definitely hold a lot of weight. Yeah, but did you know he won a blue clay tournament? Oh, man. Grasping at straws here.
Madrid. It was in Madrid.
Oh, was it Madrid? I thought it was Barcelona that did it. Okay, my bad.
No, yeah, that's why I was talking about Madrid because, that's what they did back in the day.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought.
2012 is what I was watching.
Okay.
Federer against Burdick. Do you remember that crazy good shot where he hits behind him and Burdick is just like frozen, doesn't even go for the ball?
Oh, gosh, I don't even remember that shot. I'll have to go look up the highlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Philip.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Valerie, for doing these notes and putting this together. Really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to talking with you on the next podcast after this tournament. That'll be so fun. And I think if we're lucky, we'll have Martin Keady join us as well. That will be great.
Yes.
And hey, I just wanted to give a shout out. Mother's Day is coming up and our nonprofit is doing a promotion with Crayola flowers. So if people want to support our nonprofit just by giving flowers to their mother, they can do that because 10% of the proceeds goes to the nonprofit. So if you just go to our website, you'll see a link for the ability to give flowers, lovesetmatch.org. And you can also go to my Instagram or lovesetmatch Instagram and click on the bio link. And there's like a link tree that, you know, has the link for giving flowers. So that's just another way that you can support this fun podcast that we do, as well as the mission of of all that we're doing at Love Set Match.
Yes, please support it. I mean, support it more so for what Philip actually does that's amazing, which is so much for the community and the children in the community, and then the underserved children in the community. Definitely much cooler of a mission than the podcast.
Well, it's all our passion. And, it is. You know, we're just trying to build community. And
100%.
Love doing that.
Philip,
thank you
Philip
so much for
is
listening,
the
everyone.
Community builder extraordinaire.
We're doing it together, Valerie. We're doing it together.
Oh, you're the best.
I guess I have to say, may all your serves be Rebecca aces now, right?
Yes. That'll make it even more interesting to sync up.
Okay, let's try it.
All right.
May all your serves be
Rebecca aces.
Aces. Bye, Valerie.
Have a good one.